The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Gaetis, Judge Larkin, Judge Cochran, the Honorable Theodora K. Gaetis presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We're happy to be here with you. I just want to give the attorneys a warning as we get started this morning. As Ms. Sagal told you, we have been having some really strange technical difficulties this morning with Zoom, and this is a problem that apparently is across the panels of the court. We are all together now. Fortunately, it is possible that due to these technical issues, we'll lose you at some point during the argument, and the problem apparently involves logging back in after you've been lost. So if that happens to either of our attorneys that are on right now, just try logging back on. And if you are unable to do so, we will make sure to communicate with you. Ms. Segal will send you an email with further instructions. We're sort of having to be a little bit improvisational this morning, and I do apologize for that. Hopefully we'll be able to get through the arguments without any glitches. As we all know, we are appearing this morning via the Zoom platform. We have three cases scheduled for oral argument and two cases scheduled for non-oral conferences. We're recording the Zoom session this morning. I'll just note that no independent recordings are permitted. The recording that we're creating will be available for viewing shortly on the court's website. The first case this morning is Stephen Hill et al. Versus Bemidji Township, A20-1309. Counsel, you can assume that we've read your briefs, that we're familiar with the facts of the cases. The appellant will be allotted 15 minutes for argument. The respondent will have 15 minutes, and then the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. The timekeeper is keeping time right on the screen. And again, if we have any sort of technical difficulties, if we lose one of you, for example, we'll just stop the timer and pick up where we left off. Before you begin your argument, please introduce yourself. And with that, we will begin with the argument for appellant. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, Jason Kubuschek on behalf of Bemidji Township. I also have my associate, Julia Kelly, listening in on this morning's hearing. This case stems from the denial of a building permit. The building permit was denied because the plat was never properly approved pursuant to Minnesota Statute Chapter 505. The Hills appealed that matter to the district court. Following a two-day court trial, the district court issued findings of fact, conclusions of law, order for judgment, which determined the township's decision to deny the building permit was arbitrary and capricious and ordered the township to issue the building permit. The township did file post-trial motions for amended findings and new trial. Those motions were denied, and we're now here before you asking you to overturn the district court's decision. Knowing that the court's gone through the briefs, I'm going to just briefly touch upon the facts. But this is a case, the underlying development was on 60 acres within Bemidji Township. It was zoned R2. So at that time, this was going forward in 2005, the lots had to be approximately 2.4 acres in size. The zoning ordinance allowed for single family homes. It also allowed for multifamily homes. Any other uses not specifically listed out in the zoning ordinance were deemed prohibited. In this particular case, the Bemidji Township zoning ordinance did not allow for common interest communities, which I'll refer to as CICs. So they're not even mentioned in the zoning ordinance. Rather, the zoning ordinance has a specific provision indicating that any subdivision of land within the township must follow the requirements of Minnesota Statute Chapter 505. In this case, the township had a planning commission. They were to review it, and ultimately, before a 505 plat can be approved, the town board has to sign off on it, and that did not occur in this case. S&J Enterprises, which was at the time owned by the Hills, applied for a conditional use permit, a CUP, for the CIC. And I apologize, we've got a lot of acronyms here, but probably the easiest way to describe it. So it was a CUP for a CIC. Now, there's nothing in the township ordinance that allowed this, and but yet it went forward.
So,
and
Mr. Kubuschek, given given the statutes governing CICs, does it matter that the township ordinance didn't allow for a CIC, particularly where the statute indicates that Section 505 statutes don't apply to CICs under 515?
Well, Your Honor, thank you for that question. And that jumps right to the Hills preemption argument. Is really, they're arguing that under the provisions of 515B.2-110, the CIC statute, that there's a provision there, they don't have to follow the 505 plat requirements. But I think it's important to note that that's not necessarily true. You have 505B.1-01 that talks about the applicability of local requirements. And it specifically states that, you know, the township, county, subdivision, zoning ordinance can't prohibit the CIC form of ownership. So they certainly can have the CIC form of ownership. And it also specifically states that they can't impose any other conditions on it different from different forms of ownership or different forms of subdividing. So they can't make it more difficult than a 505. But the last sentence of that provision says nothing in this, or no provision in this chapter, invalidates or modifies any provision of any zoning or subdivision ordinance or regulation. So the state legislature specifically carved out an exception that allowed townships and counties to require for subdivisions of land that they follow the 505. Now, certainly, if they allow CICs, then they can have this other process that the Hills talk about, that they can follow the 515B process, and they don't have to follow the strict requirements of the 505 platting, you know, as how plats are laid out.
So your argument is essentially that a township can decide that no CICs will be permitted within its boundaries.
What I'm saying is, under this particular statute, 515B.1-10, townships and counties can allow CICs, form of ownership. But the distinction is, we're not talking about form of ownership, we're talking about how it's being subdivided or developed. And that particular statute said that, you know, you can have that as far as a form of ownership, but we can require you, when you're doing the CICs, to follow the 505 subdivising regulations or requirements if we have that in our ordinances. And that's what we have here. Both the township and the county ordinances are very specific that any subdivision of land within either the township or the county has to follow 505.
Can I follow up on that, Mr. Kubuschek? Do we even need to reach that question? Because here in 2005, would you agree that the township board approved the conditional use permit that allowed for this development, provided the conditions 1-10 were met?
I would agree that the 2005 town board approved a CUP for a CIC, but I would say there's nothing in the ordinance that allowed them to grant the CUP for the CIC. There's no legal authority in the ordinance for that.
But there wasn't an appeal of that decision back in 2005, correct?
There was no appeal, but the township's not barred from correctly enforcing its ordinance. And that's what's happening here.
Well, but here we have a an application for a building permit for a lot for which there is already been an approved conditional use permit, correct?
I would say the CUP was approved, but it was not lawfully approved. There was no authority to grant that CUP, and there's no authority under either the township ordinance or county ordinance for the CIC.
So basically you're saying there can be a subsequent challenge to that 2005 decision in this context.
What I'm saying is that a CUP that is not legally issued cannot be applied against the township or the county. That if something is illegally granted, whether it's by mistake or on purpose, the township is not barred from going back and correcting that error.
Well, in reviewing the board's decision, shouldn't we review the reasons the board gave? And it gave two reasons, correct?
It did give two reasons. The two reasons were that the lot size was too small, it didn't meet the R2 requirements, and that the condition 8, which required signing off on the plat pursuant to Minnesota Statute Chapter 505, had not been met, which is what we're talking about here, is that this plat was never properly approved because 505 was not applied to it.
But condition 8 didn't actually reference 505, correct?
Condition 8 specifically referenced the review and approval of the plat.
But it didn't reference section 505, correct?
Correct.
Or chapter 505.
When you look at the CUP, it did not reference 505. The CUP also contains language which required the applicant to comply with all applicable ordinances and regulations, which would be subdividing the land pursuant to Minnesota Chapter 505.
Okay, well, if we do need to reach the issue, why isn't section 515B.2-110 paragraph G, the more specific provision? Wouldn't that control over the more general language that you read to us earlier in 505?
It would not, because the 515B.1-106 is more specific, because it specifically talks about the applicability of local requirements. And it allows for the counties and townships to have specific regulations which can deal with the subdivision of land. So, under plaintiff's interpretation, they're saying, well, 505 should never apply, and that we can just go forward with the 515B.2-110. But if you take their interpretation, they would be allowed to put a CIC plat anywhere, that we wouldn't have any control or any regulation of it, whether it's as far as what zoning district it goes in or as far as how it's subdivided. And that's not what 1-106 states.
Except that the board approved it under a CUP, right?
The board approved it.
And so you're basically saying the board acted unlawfully back in 2005, so the board should now be allowed to reverse the decision it made back in 2005. And
correct.
To the detriment of the applicant.
Well, both that
the board's own error should be held against the applicant, basically.
What I'm saying is that the 2005 CUP was illegally granted because it wasn't allowed under the township zoning ordinance. And under the Stotts Wright County case, an applicant's charged with the knowledge of the law. So they're charged with the knowledge that the ordinance itself doesn't allow for the CUP or a CIC. So they had to follow through with, if they're going to subdivide this land, they have to follow through with the requirements of both the township and the county ordinances, which required the use of Minnesota Statute 505.
How does the North Oaks case impact your argument?
Well, the North Oaks case is an equitable estoppel case, which was just raised for the first time by the Hills in post-trial briefs. It's not an actual claim in the case. It wasn't raised at trial. But if you look at North Oaks, In a lot of ways, I think it supports our claims here because North Oaks city staff misinterpreted its own ordinance as far as setbacks and requirement locations. And there, the court found that equitable estoppel could not be applied against the city because there was no wrongful conduct. Here, at most, we've got staff, township staff, misinterpreting its own zoning ordinance as to what they can do with the CUP and whether or not the CUP process can be utilized for a CIC plat. So I think North Oaks supports a denial of any type of equitable estoppel claim.
So you argued that equitable estoppel was not raised below, and it certainly doesn't look like the district court addressed the issue and its findings. Given our standard of review, does that matter?
I don't think it matters. I mean, what we're talking about here is the applicability of the township's ordinance, the county's ordinance, and its interplay with Minnesota Statute 505 and 515B. And those are all legal questions which this court can review de novo. I talked a lot about the CUP not being allowed under the township's ordinance. I think the other thing I want to touch on is that the county's subdivision ordinance number 5, which was trial exhibit 101, did not allow for any CICs. And under Minnesota Statute 394.33, the township can have zoning, but it can't be less restrictive than the county's zoning. And in this case, the township issuing a CUP for a CIC would be less restrictive than the county's prohibition on CICs. So that's another reason the CUP was not properly granted, and that if there's any platting or subdividing, it has to fall through with the 505 process. I think that's, I've gone through all my items here, and so I'll certainly be ready to address the court's questions now or in my 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Any other questions? I see none. So we will speak with you again during your rebuttal. Thank you for your argument. And Mr. Kaysen, you may present argument for the respondent.
Thank you, Your Honors. Ryan Kaysen, may it please the court. Ryan Kaysen on behalf of Stephen Jill Hill, the respondents in this matter. And I do have Mr. Hill with me as well. The current board of Bemidji Township seems to be on a bit of a scorched earth tactic towards this thing, where they're trying to undermine everything that the Hills did with the prior board in 2005, the work that they did with the county of Beltrami and the city of Bemidji back in those days. The Hills did a lot of work with those entities to create this CIC. They worked with the three entities to make sure it was the right thing to do. Hills didn't know what to do themselves, so they worked with Mr. Mellender, the zoning administrator with the Bemidji Township, did whatever he said that they wanted to do. The county knew what was going on the entire time. Like I said, at that time, they determined the CIC model was the appropriate method for development at that time, and they needed to get the approval from the township and from the county. That was done. Everybody knew how this was going to be formed as a CIC under 515B. The Hills moved forward with what was required of them. They had numerous meetings, like I said, with Mr. Mellender. He had worked with them, the Hills, on two other CICs also in Beltrami County that went under the same method. Those ones are Wheatfields and Prairie Wood. So they'd worked together. They knew how the process was supposed to work within what the county allowed. That was shown by Mr. Mellender and Mr. Patnode as well throughout the trial. And it shows also that Mr. Mellender worked with the township attorney, who was Rebecca Anderson at that time. And she knew that this was created as a 515B common interest community as well. And that is shown. The Planning Commission meeting minutes indicate that she was on board with the way that this was moving forward. So after numerous meetings with the township, they did approve the CIC and Granite of the Hills, the CUP.
Mr. Keeson,
yes.
I have a question for you in that regard. What statute gave the township the authority to issue the CUP for this CIC?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that it, since it was, they have to allow the common interest form of ownership. So 515B would require them to have to allow this, or they can't move forward. I mean, so I think that that's where it comes from, Your Honor. You're muted.
I apologize. And is there a statute that generally authorizes the board to issue a CUP if in certain circumstances?
I guess I don't have that cite off the top of my head, Your Honor, but I apologize for that. I don't have the answer to that one.
Thank you.
I guess it would be under the normal authorization of the township. They went forward with it. The county moved forward with this common interest community. They allowed it. They did everything that they were required to do. Mr. Howe, the zoning or the chairman at that time, said there was nothing further for them to do. The township, the current township board in this situation, said that the township at that time did not approve the plat. That is different than what Mr. Howe said in trial. He said that we did approve that plat. So that number 8 was actually met by the Hills, for which is number 8 in the conditions of the CUP. So he had, that was not ever contradicted at all. Then it did go to the county for its approval as well. The county granted its approval, which allowed the Hills to record the common interest community, the declaration, and the plat is actually attached to the declaration. It is not a standalone plat. It is actually part of the declaration. It was done appropriately. We have testimony from Mr. Patnaud, who was the environmental administrator of Beltrami County at that time. Charlene Sturck, who is the current Beltrami County recorder, and Brent Rood was also the current environmental administrator of Beltrami County. Further, the county surveyor, who was George Colomb at the time, indicates in the Exhibit 13, which is the Beltrami County Planning Reporting Packet, that the plat does conform to 515B2-110 subdivision C. So based upon that confirmation of the above reference people, the exhibits, Your Honor, or the judge, the district court judge, determined that the CIC was created appropriately pursuant to Minnesota 515B. She also determined that the building permit was arbitrary and capricious because this was met, the conditions of the conditional use permit were met. And then she also determined that the township must issue the building permit. Excuse me, sorry. So this, for the township to now say that they didn't approve it then, is trying them trying to change the history. They're trying to say that this never happened. We have the people involved from that time saying it did happen. So their decision must be arbitrary as a matter of law. Further, the township is saying that 505 must be followed. That statute, 515B2-110G, specifically says a CIC plat that complies with subsection C is not subject to chapter 505. It does not get more clear than that. County surveyor said it complies, so then with 515BC or 515B2-110C, it isn't required to comply with 505. We're not saying that they have to not still work with a township to get their approval. We're not intimating that at all. It simply says that this one part of this development doesn't need to comply with another statute because it complies with this one that specifically deals with common interest communities. It was approved as 505B. It was recorded as our 515B. It was recorded as a 515B. The township knew that. The county knew that. It was recorded that way. So they should be able to move forward with it as being recorded. After it was recorded, they spent approximately $1 million to get this development into shape to be able to sell it. They built roads, they landscaped the development, they built the holding ponds, they added natural gas lines, planted trees, built a split rail fence around the development, and they paid taxes on these 62 individual units for 14 years as well. So they relied on what the government did at that time. They relied on what the government told them to do that at that time. And in conclusion, the district court was correct in determining that this CIC was validly created. They were correct in determining that the township's denial was arbitrary and capricious. Based upon the overwhelming evidence, this court should also determine that the district court was correct and that the denial by the township was arbitrary and capricious. Accordingly, we are requesting that this court deny the township's appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaysen. Mr. Kubicek, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Let's just wait until we are our clock is ready. Okay, it is ready. You may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to briefly touch upon that, I think a question was raised as to what statute or provision allowed a CUP for the CIC. And there is nothing in Minnesota statutes 462 or 394, which would allow a CUP for the CIC. You have to look back to the township, look back to the township ordinances. And if within the township ordinances, we look at the R2 district, again, the special uses or conditional uses, as they phrase it, there's nothing in there that allows a CIC. So there is no statutory or ordinance authority for a CUP for a CIC. Attorney Kaysen highlighted the testimony at trial. I'm not going to disagree. People testified to that, but what we are saying is that, you know, they testified incorrectly. If you look at exhibits 100 and 101, and everyone testified that there's nothing in those ordinances which allow a CIC. Instead, you have to follow the 505 process for subdivisions. Just because they did it in the past doesn't make it right. Just because they believe they did it right doesn't make it right. You have to look at the underlying law. And that's why we are saying this is really a question of ordinance and statutory interpretation, which is a question of law to be reviewed de novo. I know Mr. Kaysen.
So I just want to ask, so following, assuming we agree with your argument, just sort of following it to its natural extension, what is the township's position about what the Hills should do at this point?
The Hills can certainly develop this land. They just have to follow through with the requirements of the R2 district, which would be the lot sizes. They could also seek a variance. They have smaller lots in that area. And if they are going to set forth a plat, they have to follow the 505 requirements. So it's not like this lot can't be developed. We're just saying that you have to follow through with the correct procedures, which under both the township ordinance and county ordinance is a 505 platting process that's reviewed by both entities. You can't just force a 505B CIC on them. In fact, I think that sets bad precedent if you're saying the statute requires or allows a CIC and in all situations, you're really taking away both township and county powers under their subdivision ordinances.
What about ownership of the holding pond? What's your suggestion regarding that?
Well, I mean, the facts of the case show this holding pond was really to correct the errors from the Hills' prior development of the neighboring property. I mean, they worked out with the city on this holding pond. The whole reason the holding pond was developed was because the Hills' development next to this had flooding issues. And so they are trying to alleviate those flooding issues. That holding pond can still remain there. I mean, there's still the possibility to develop this land. We're not saying it's undevelopable. The holding pond is there, there's easements for it. But what we're saying is you can't just force the 515B process upon the township and the county when you've got an improperly issued CUP. You have to follow the proper requirements and review by the township and the county.
So I'm having a hard time with the, you can't force the CIC concept of process on the township when at the time this was being developed, the township was aware of it. They were at the table. They were agreeable to all of it, right? It's only now, years later, that the township, for whatever reason, doesn't want this.
And I think at that time, the town zoning administrator and the town board thought they were allowed to do it, thought they were allowed to give a CUP for the CIC. When this came back for the building permit, the town board looked at it again, its zoning administrator looked at it again and said, wait a second, that was never properly issued. You can't go that route.
Okay. So why wouldn't we consider equitable estoppel here? And if it wasn't decided by the district court, why wouldn't we remand and ask the district court to take a look at that proposal?
I think it wasn't properly raised, but even if you look at the facts of the case, there was no wrongful conduct. So they can't sustain that claim. So I don't think that's properly on appeal. And even if it is, they can't sustain it and that claim shouldn't be allowed.
There was no wrongful conduct by the township.
Correct. And I refer back to that North Oaks case where, again, staff misinterpreted its own ordinances, issued an opinion to the property owner. The property owner built according to that interpretation. And the court found there that you couldn't apply equitable estoppel against the city. The city was allowed to correctly enforce its ordinance to have that building moved. So for the reasons set forth in our briefs and here at oral argument, we would ask the court to overturn the district court decision and affirm the township's denial of the building permit and find that the plat was not properly or lawfully approved. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments this morning. I'm relieved we didn't have the technical problems that we anticipated potentially having. The case is now submitted to us. We will issue our decision within a statutory timeframe. Thanks again.